Washington Square On Air is the audio town square for the Washington Square Review, Lansing Community College's literary journal. Writers, readers, scholars, publishing professionals, citizens of the world, gather here and chat about all things writing. Hey there, this is Melissa Ford Luckin from the Washington Square Review. I'm here today with two authors, Eliza Mann and Reem Kashat. Eliza, let's talk with you first. I know that your real name is Patricia Barnett, mm-hmm. and you're actually kind of a corporate person, but tell us a little bit about your writing life first.
Well, my writing life began in 2011, and I decided, you know, it had been years and years of like noodling on it, thinking like, oh, I could write something. And, you know, you just don't ever think that you can make that leap. So in 2011, I like got my nerves together and went forward with it. So I've been writing ever since then.
Was there something in particular that suddenly made you take the leap?
You know, my partner, Ryan, was like, you know what? You seem like you're just kind of going through the motions. You don't really seem happy. You're a mom, you know, you have a relationship, you have a job, but you don't seem happy. And he said, I think you need a hobby. And I was like, well, I used to like to write. And next thing you know, I sat down one night with a pen and a piece of paper because typing it felt too permanent, you know?
Yep.
And I just started writing, and then I got a little confidence. I wrote a short story and submitted it to a little online magazine, and it got published. So I was like, oh my God, I'm a writer. So it happened like that.
So what were the first steps that you did take publicly?
So I joined RWA like first because I was like, I want to write romance. You know, even though I had been reading romance my whole life, I wanted to learn the mechanics of romance. So I joined RWA, which was Romance Writers of America, found a little group, Greater Detroit Romance Writers of America. And then I joined and I found all the things that I didn't know about romance writing immediately. But they kind of helped me, like, you know, hone the craft, you know. So one of the first steps, you know, I did was try to seek help. And then I kind of took it from there. You know, they had great guidance, great tools, things that I could think about and say, okay, I want to take this approach. So that was very helpful.
Yeah, I'm kind of laughing when you said you learned all this underside because reading fiction and writing fiction are like really different.
Absolutely. You know, you read it and you imagine this writer sitting in like a fluffy robe and high heel shoes, and she's like writing her book, very calm,
candles.
Very patient. Candles. You know, it was very much like a Romance in the Stone, you know, in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, she just gets up every day and writes her book, and then it just comes out of her head easily, and then she sends it off to her fabulous editor.
Right.
And then it gets published. Woohoo.
Yep.
And so very different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're going to talk a little bit more about that in a couple minutes, but let's bring in Reem.
All right. Hey, girl.
Hi.
So you guys are friends in real life.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about that. How did you meet?
So we were working together. I came in like guns blazing, like ready to change the world. I was like a supervisor over enrollment at our job. And I met Reem, and she was kind of like, you know, like, hey, you know, and I was like, okay.
And I don't remember it like that, but okay.
Tell me how you remember it.
I think we were, it felt like it was a divided environment.
Yeah.
And you were on management side and I was in, you know, employee side. And I think I might have had a little bit of resistance because I felt that she had kind of told a lie and got me in trouble. So that's why I had that look like, when she walked past.
I had no idea, by the way. I was literally fighting for my life. You know, it was my first time, like, being a people leader. So I was on the struggle bus very much. And I was, like, looking for any friend because the management folks kind of treated me differently because I'm like a jokester. I'm like, you know, I'm one of those people that doesn't take anything too seriously. And they were all very serious people.
So you kind of didn't fit in with the management, but you didn't fit in with the staff employees either.
That's right. The individual contributors.
You did need a friend.
Get out of here, snitch. And I had no idea. I was like, okay, you know. And then one day I was walking past Reem's desk and my husband. Eric, Vampire Eric from True Blood, the Southern Vampire series. She had a big old screen saver of my husband. And I was like, I was like, why you got my husband on your screen? She was like, that's my husband. I was like, I'm going on break. We could talk about it. And then that is literally how we became friends, or at least, you know, cordial, right? And then it went on, you know, we were like taking breaks with each other. You know how you do, like coffee, like, hey, let's go get a coffee. And then she said, we were talking about reading, of course. And she said, well, I wrote a book. I said, what? What do you mean? And then she was like, yeah, I wrote a fan fiction romance based on Harry Potter.
It was Severus and Mani.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I was like, that sounds awesome. And she let me read it. And I was like, listen, girl, I go to this group. You got to come with me because I'm always soliciting friends. You can see this. So I was like, you got to come to my monthly meeting.
Come be my friend.
That's right. And she like resisted for like 2 months.
About two months.
Yeah. Finally, I went to the RWA conference and I came back. And then you were like, I was like, oh, my God, I met and I saw, you know, and Charlene Harris was actually there, who was we were a big fan of. And Beverly Jenkins was there and Brenda Jack. It was just amazing back in.
Anne Rice.
And I slobbered all over Anne Rice. Poor lady, may she rest in peace. But then when I told her that, she was like, okay, maybe your little group has something to it. And she came and she never left. So we got closer and closer. Literally through books and writing. So
that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
I'm pretty sure that I know this because I know you personally, that your career hasn't been all hearts and flowers and loveliness.
Oh, Lord have mercy. You know that.
So once you got into the idea of that the writing was work and that there wasn't going to be, you know, sparkles and sunshine, what happened next?
Well, I cried a little bit. unfortunately, it's not an even road. Right. So there's ups, downs, hills, valleys, and the highs are really high. Like you get an agent, you get a big contract, you get something that you've been wanting for so long. And then you get those valleys. Like you can literally have a super high, and then you get a rejection. You know what I mean?
Is there anything that stands out in your mind, a memory of when that happened?
The very worst thing. Let me see. I think the very worst thing was I was actually pitching to an agent, and I almost tipped the table over on her, and I was like, oh, my God. But losing my editor was probably the worst. Mm-hmm. Because I finally had, like, nailed it. I got my contract with a Big Six at the time, it's Big Six publishing house, and you know, things were going good. It was time for me to do my second book, and we were literally working through it, and then she got let go. And I don't know how many authors have lost an editor, but you have to kind of find your way back through that. And it was another day of laying in the bed and staring at the ceiling, go, why me, Lord? It knocks the wind out of you, and it takes a minute for you to get your stride back. So that was probably one of the very worst things that happened.
I think that's one of the misconceptions that people have sometimes, is that once you hit that one first success, that it's all just magic from there. But it's really not. It's like not. You said, it's ups and downs and ups and downs.
Mm-hmm. But it is a wonderful life, right? Because we get the opportunity to create stories that will resonate with someone. Someone who is like you as a little girl or like you as a teenager or like the woman you are now that just needs a little boost and understanding that happily ever after can be for them. Whatever that looks like in all its myriad of forms, you know, that book that you're writing can do that for someone. So that's the thing that you kind of cleave to. You're like, oh my God, this will keep me going, that someone will email me out of the blue and be like, I love that story, or DM you, and we love that, right? But they DM you and say, this story meant so much to me, and that's gotta pull you through.
One of the things that has to happen first, as you said, you have to get an editor. And so talk a little bit about how you work with an editor when you know, you're sharing your vision, and then if there's a disconnect, shall we say?
Yes. So, you know, we always start out with the book in our head. These are our children. These are our babies. So we're very protective. So when an editor comes along and says, you know, that tension is just not enough. That plot point, you need a little more. It can be like gutting, you know.
Or if they pick at your character.
I think the worst is probably when they're like, your character is just a B word, you know, like, she's too strong. And, you know, you have this person in your head, they've lived with you for months and months. So it is challenging, but I do advise when you get that, like, take a step back and see it, try to see it from a different perspective. It's very hard to do that sometimes because you love, you know, your characters, your plot, your story. But sometimes they may be on to something.
For sure.
And there are times when you can say, you know what, this is true to my character, this is true to my character's culture, whatever it is. And then you just set those. You're like, I cannot change this piece. And hopefully you have an editor that is understanding about that. From what I understand, some editors are not. I have not worked with an editor that was like, absolutely not. But I do know that they exist.
Yeah. There's give and take, which is, I think, another thing that a lot of readers aren't aware of.
Yeah.
Is that what they're reading is a collaboration between possibly the editor and the author, but might also be marketing may come into it.
Yeah, it's a whole, like, you know how they do that image where it's like the tip of the iceberg is showing and underneath there's this whole glacier. And that's very much what it is. There are the cover design, you know, as authors always have a cover design in their mind. And then you get it, it's like, this is underwhelming. And, you know, or this is not how my characters look. Or it could be 100 things. All of those things come together to make a book. And it takes a very long time, especially when you're working with a publishing house. Every little detail is kind of thought about before the release, and that transfers from indie to traditional authors. You know, it's a lot of little decisions to make that one book happen.
Is there anything else you can think of that readers may not be aware of when they're reading a book that goes into the, you know, the craft part?
I think readers think everything comes together in a single line. There are times when I write backwards. There are times when I write from the side, you know, there are times when you're standing in front of the refrigerator and a line pops into your head and you're like, I must add this, you know, so it's not a linear process all the time. Some writers sit down and they write, you know, just straight out, but very few do that. I think most of us kind of, you know, take it in sections and chunks. And I think that's part of the entire process, you know, how you come at it, and it's not always just a straight line.
It's also, when you're writing, you're also balancing your day job. So talk a little bit about that.
Well, it can be challenging, as you can imagine. And I work in corporate America. I work in health insurance. And, you know, there are times when that job is so demanding, it can kill your little voice. You know, the muse is like, I don't want to play with you when you all scary lady.
demanding in which way?
It can be late nights working. I do get the luxury of working from home, but it still can be like 7, 8 o'clock. And, you know, my writing life deserves time too, right? So at 9 o'clock, I've had dinner, I'm sitting there, and then I'm trying to push that day job out of my head. And it's hard sometimes. And I think that's the sacrifice that some authors have to make, you know, doing the day job and then doing the writing job. But the thing that you always have to remember is what I just said, that writing piece, it deserves time too. So, you know, I'm kind of protective over my weekends. I kind of go, okay, mm-hmm. I really gotta, you know, I need at least 8 hours over these 2 days to spend time writing. And it's, you know, I want to say I write every night, and there are authors that will tell you you have to write every night. But sometimes you're just physically not able. Mm-hmm. You're just tired and you need rest. You need to water yourself. You know, you need to do all the things, spend time with your family. So sure. It is definitely a juggle sometimes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Reem, is there anything she's leaving out?
No, I mean, our day jobs are on a computer as well, right? And we mm-hmm. write on a computer. So a lot of times I can't stand looking at the computer after mm-hmm. I log off of work. So I get that it's hard to find that balance sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. And I think the dream is, oh, I will write and it will support me and my family.
Right, right, right. Yes, yes.
And then you get a royalty check for like $8.62. And you're like, ooh, that doesn't
Yeah, from stuff
milk.
That sold a year ago.
That's right. That's right. It's surprising. And I'm thankful for everything. However, $8.62 is just not going to cut it at the grocery store, sadly.
It's not even going to cut it at Starbucks these days.
That's right.
It might pay for your parking.
Maybe. Yeah. So, but yeah, that I think that's the dream. Mm-hmm. But, you know, everybody doesn't get there. And I think that's important for new writers, too, to understand that sometimes your writing life may not look like what you envision. And like I said, I saw Romance in the Stone back in the early 1990s.
Yep.
And she was living her life. She was writing. She had a cat. She had a Manhattan apartment. She had a fireplace. Mm-hmm. The fireplace was amazing, right? And I was like, oh my God, that's such a
It'll
cool
be just
career.
Like that.
It'll be just like that. I'll be, you know, mediocre wealthy, right? Mm-hmm. And eventually some guy will sell a boat down the middle of, you know, yeah. you know, and that'll be it. I'll be married and happy.
Well, that just reminded me when you mentioned earlier when you first came back from that first conference with all the things, and she came in and she like brought it to my desk and was like, look, if we write this story and then we would break down, we'll have like $1 million by the end of the year.
It was so ridiculous. And you know what? I love that girl from my past. And I wish she was yeah. here sometimes because she was so blind.
Yeah. Well, talk a little bit about what you're currently working on, the kinds of books and what you've got going on that way.
So I am actually working on a small town romance. It's contemporary, and it is very much season romance. And season romance is, you know, once you're hitting the midlife. So she is dealing with her mother's ailments. They had a difficult relationship. And she's also returning to her small town.
Okay.
So it's been a lot of fun. I'm trying to push some comedy in there mm-hmm. because, you know, you want to laugh with all that drama happening,
right.
you know, so, but it's been fun to write. And then I think I'm going to work on my paranormal vampire series that I have out. So I'll work on the third story in that series.
Yeah. Another thing, what you're saying reminds me that people often aren't aware of is how deadlines mm-hmm. impact what you're working on and how marketing, you have to choose what you're going to work on. So you might want to work on one thing, but you need to work on something else to finish up a series or anything.
Yeah.
Has that impacted you?
I think, you know, you can't write to trend, unfortunately.
Right.
But I think we all have to bear in mind what might be passe, what might not be selling in romance anymore. Mm-hmm. I never thought about that either. Mm-hmm. I never thought about, oh, there will come a time when historical romance is a hard sell. Never in a million years did I think that. Or there will come a time when there's a saturation of rom-com, mm-hmm. you know. So those are the things that you have to, like, put in your head, too, as you come up with an idea. And that's so depressing. You're like, I want my muse to just run free. But you can't write, you know, some of the things we used to write in the 80s and 90s.
Amnesia.
That's right. Or, you know, like, you know, just like modern day rogues, like yep. that is not gonna fly right now, you know. So you know, we just have to bear that in mind. It does make a difference. Even if you're not on deadline, even if you're not contracted, what you write should be very representative of things that are appropriate for the time. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of things we just can't do anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah, that does play into it. And then deadlines are the scourge of the earth. They,
yeah,
everybody goes, I want to be in contract. And, you know, in contract means that a publisher has purchased your book. And, you know, at the end of that contract, or at some point, you're going to have a date when the book is due. and you're supposed to be writing that whole 8 months.
Yes. You know? But not celebrating for the first two.
No,
and then
no,
you're like,
no.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, procrastinators probably suffer from this the worst. They're like, oh my God, I got 3 months left. Let me go sit down. So yeah, writing to deadline is challenging, but it's also a lot of fun too sometimes to, you know, push yourself when you're running up against it.
Except when that blinker, the mouse just blinks at you and you have no words come out.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. You know what? Contract, like, brain deadness.
Yeah. It's like,
that's not a word.
Yeah. It's like a mental block.
Mm-hmm. That has happened before when you're like, I got to have this in, and you just can't think of a single thing. Mm-hmm. And your muse is shut down and your characters aren't chattering.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and that is the most horrifying experience ever.
And each day that goes by,
you're like, oh my God, I can't think of anything.
Deadline gets closer.
I don't have a single fix for that, by the way. I just kind of have to try to inspire myself. Like, I go back to, like, you know, the recipes, as they say. I go back to, like, old school things that made me feel good.
Mm-hmm.
I read old books that, you know, make me feel good. You know, I try to, like, capture that vibe that I'm looking for. Challenging. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work all the time.
All right. Well, you mentioned putting some comedy in your romances that you write.
Yeah.
And I know that you do some comedy stand-up.
I do.
So let's hear about that.
So I don't know if I was having a little midlife crisis, you know. It was right around Christmas. I was like, I need something else to do. And, I didn't have enough, you know. Grandkids and, you know.
Right,
work.
Yeah, deadlines.
Exactly. And deadlines. And I was like, I think I'm going to take a comedy class. And it really was initially, I'm going to learn the art of writing jokes, because joke writing is definitely a skill set. You know, you have to learn about, you know, tagging and all of the things that go into joke telling.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little different than romance writing because, you know, each little story is very short, concise. New comics get about 3 minutes on stage, 5 minutes on stage. So, you know, you have to learn how to be concise. But I was like, oh, that's totally what I'm doing. I walked into class and he was like, and we'll be doing a 5-minute comedy set at the end of class at Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle. And I was like, Mark, we're not doing that. Like, this seats like 200 people. Are you insane? And he was like, no, you can do it. It's fine. You'll be good. I was so afraid. I got up on stage and some other person came out and was like, I am so funny. I was like, who are you? And I just let her go. So it has been quite a ride. I'm in the advanced comedy class right now. I've been doing open mics, and I have another show coming up in August. And I didn't think I could love anything as much as writing in the way of a career. But it's like your heart just opened up and there's more room. Look at that. Mm-hmm. So I absolutely love it. It is. It feels like coming home.
Has it fed into your writing?
It has, actually. I do see myself putting very inappropriate jokes in my book, and I'm probably going to have to rein that back. Like, right now, the character, the mom, she has dementia, and she is the one who I'm letting be the most inappropriate, like flirting with her male nurse caregiver and, you know, all the things. So that's been a lot of fun. So, yeah.
Does she try the jokes out on you first?
I think she's been entertaining me since we met.
Okay. Can you tell when she's trying a new bit on you versus
sometimes,
like,
okay. Yeah. Because she'll come out with this zinger. And I'm like, where'd that come from?
It's like a complete joke instead of being pieces of a joke.
But she's always, in any setting that we're in, she's always an entertainer from coworkers that we would hang out with after work, or, you know, she's always been the funny one. And I'd be like, oh, tell that one. Tell them that story, you know. And
I have. You're right. I've been like, I probably thought I was funny a long time. Like,
not thought you were funny. None of us would be laughing at those jokes.
Yeah, it's fun, though. I really love it. It does add to that time thing where deadlines are like, okay, I'm going to work on the book now. But it has been amazing. It's an amazing ride.
It's more creative energy probably loops it in and really feeds the does. Other creative energy, which it I think does. Maybe brings us back to what we were talking about before with, you know, like a deadline brain freeze or any kind of brain freeze is to find a different outlet for your creativity and get your creative mind awakened again, and then it'll loop back in.
Yeah, I believe I have less, since I'm working on comedy and then a novel, I have had less of those blinking cursor moments where you're just like, I don't know what to say. Mm-hmm. I don't have a story to tell. It is, it has been very helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also it seems like the success would nurture your self-doubt. Yes. Having success in another area that's fun and more representative of you than perhaps corporate America.
Exactly. I think all of my coworkers wonder, what is she doing here? Like, what is happening? So, but yeah, it really does help. It lends to, the voices lend to one another. And one day, hopefully, I can leave corporate America so that they'll stop, you know, trying to usher me out the door. But yeah, it's been great.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, I know we're going to post some links down in the show notes so people can stay in touch with both of those careers.
Yes.
So thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Amazing.
Thanks for stopping by the Audio Town Square of the Washington Square Review. Until next time, this has been the Washington Square On Air from Lansing Community College. To find out more about our writers' community and literary journal, visit lcc.edu/WSR. Writing is messy, but do it anyway.
Examining the issues and topics that affect our lives from the local level to the world stage. Listen to the programs of LCC Connect anytime at lccconnect.org.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
K-12 Operations at Lansing Community College has been a proud collaborator of the Mason Promise Scholarship since 2016. The Mason Promise Scholarship is a community organization of volunteers that guarantees funding for 2 years of Lansing Community College education to selected Mason Public School students. These selected students are chosen by the Mason Public Schools at the end of the fifth grade and then become a Mason Promise Scholarship through an induction ceremony. Over the course of the next 6 years, these students receive mentoring and support, as well as introduction to career possibilities through the Pathway Program. For more information on the Mason Promise Scholarship at LCC, please visit lcc.edu/hope.
I'm Stephen Cutter, and I host a show called Coach Cut's Corner here on LCC Connect. Coach Cut's Corner is about Lansing Stars baseball program, mental performance, and just getting better in everyday life. You can always find more about LCC Connect shows and listen on demand at lccconnect.org.
I'm William Shatner. I've been around a long time, but I'm truly humbled when I see the real battles our brave, paralyzed veterans have faced defending our freedom and when they come home.
I had just come home from serving over in Germany. Next thing I know, it was 3 weeks later. I was paralyzed.
While parachuting with my platoon, my parachute didn't open, and I broke my neck. It left me paralyzed for the rest of my life.
I was on a routine patrol, and we were in the desert of Kuwait, and the vehicle flipped and landed on top of me, which left me paralyzed from the waist down.
Okay, folks, this is heroism. That's why I'm proud to support Paralyzed Veterans of America, because they've kept their promise to never leave a fallen soldier behind. A roof over their heads, accessible homes, cars, jobs, benefits.
PVA has brought me back to life.
Show them their sacrifice hasn't been in vain. Go to pva.org to learn how you can make a difference.
Studies have shown that learning a new language can positively impact your concentration, memory, and overall communication skills. The Adult Enrichment Program offers the opportunity to learn fundamental Spanish speaking, reading, and writing skills through cultural activities and in-person conversations. No prior experience necessary. Visit lcc.edu/keeplearning for more information.
LCC Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
This is Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, a podcast and radio program presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. Most any contemporary musical style can trace its roots back to the blues. Time Signatures explores the blues and its musical connections with captivating interviews, lively discussions, and news from the world of the blues.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, diving up and down these Michigan roads, yeah.
And now, here he is, your host, Jim Irvin.
Baby, I'm home. Well, thank you so much, Parker, and welcome to Time Signatures. I'm your host, Jim Irvin. And every now and again, I stumble across some pretty cool people in my travels. Our guest today on this episode is just such a gentleman. We have shared stage space together at the Token Lounge in Westland, Michigan several times, as we are both concert photographers. However, this gentleman is the designated house photographer for the Token, so I always defer to him when I'm in his house. He's a great guy with what I am certain will be some entertaining and informative stories. Ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to introduce you all to a man I consider a friend. Marty Rickard, welcome to Time Signatures. How are you?
Doing good, sir. Good to see you again.
Yeah, good to have you on. And got some great shows coming up this year at the Token. Got some good blues shows coming up. And and excited to catch some of them with you. But Marty, I want to break the ice here and get things going. Talk about your earliest memories of music.
My earliest? Gosh, that goes back a long way. Something a lot of people don't know about me is I used to be a guitar player.
Okay.
Fresh out of high school, I got a job playing with a group. And the first thing we did was fly to California and do the Bob Hope show.
Wow.
So I spent 3 days at NBC Burbank taping that segment. Had free reign to the whole NBC complex.
Now, I have to ask you, how did that present itself? How did you guys end up getting that gig?
I used to play guitar in my bedroom all the time as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother dragged me out to see this group. It was a church group, religious group, but they mm-hmm. toured nationally. Went and saw them, and the lady that was with us happened to be the church organist. And she happened to ask the director of the band, the guy in charge, says, how come you don't have a guitar player? He says, we just haven't got one. And she says, well, this kid plays. So they invited me out to audition. I spent 3 days with them auditioning, and they invited me to fit in and spent 9 months touring 40 out of 50 states.
Wow.
We kicked it off by flying to Burbank, spent 3 days at NBC doing Bob Hope's show. So I've been around music pretty much my whole life.
I have to ask you, what was it like? I mean, you were how old at that time?
17. I was young enough in California, they got strict labor laws. So I couldn't do anything in the studio there until they had a welfare worker come down to make sure I wasn't overworked.
Oh my gosh, okay.
So I spent half a day doing nothing but wandering around NBC.
Now, I've got to believe that you had an opportunity to meet Bob.
Yeah, we ended up having to go back for publicity shots of him. Unfortunately, they wanted me to have my guitar around my neck, but they put me on one side and James, our bass player, on the other side because of the guitar necks. And then when they cropped the photo for TV Guide, we got cut out.
Oh, man.
There's absolutely no publicity shots of me in the group at all.
They never send you a copy of the photos?
No.
Oh.
There is a video on YouTube that shows our performance on the Bob Hope Show. You can barely see me in the background.
You're going to have to send me the link because I'll put it up with this episode. I think it's a really cool story, Marty.
Well, the nice thing about it was while I was waiting for the welfare worker to get there, I had free rein to NBC. So we had Andy Williams in the studio next to us. Around the other way was Dean Martin's set.
Oh, man.
So there were three of us that had to wait. And we went down to the Dean Martin set. The Gold Diggers were there rehearsing their part. Wow. In the hallway, we bumped into Bing Crosby.
Man.
Debbie Reynolds was there doing Andy's show. Stars all over the place. And this is 1969.
Sure.
Back then, Diana Ross did a TV special with The Temptations.
Okay.
They were in the rehearsal hall next to us. So while I'm waiting for, you know, my assigned person to get there, we're just looking through the, you know, the windows to the rehearsal hall. I'm watching Diana Ross rehearse.
Wow. Well, okay. Let's turn the page now. How about the blues, man? Where did that journey start for you? And did you consider yourself, or I should say, do you consider yourself a blues fan? Or just a guy shooting pics of the musicians when they flow through the token?
I'm a fan of the music. I don't limit myself to just blues. With the photography, I kind of had some help.
Okay.
I happen to know a guy by the name of Alto Reed through where I used to work. And Alto and I became friends. And I bugged him for a long time. Let me come take some photos. Let me come take some photos. And he used to do a lot of stuff between tours of his own music and stuff. Okay. So finally, after a couple of years, he invited me out to take some photos. And ever since then, he just, every time he was in town, hey, I'm playing here. You coming? Yeah. And he just started dragging me around to where everyone got used to seeing me wherever Alto was. He recorded a solo album with a guy from Canada, Steve Dickinson. We were down at Harmony Park Studios. He says, come on down to the studio, bring your camera. You know, heck yeah. So the idea was after that first round of photos, he wanted the album to include a lot of the photos of him in the studio.
Okay.
The producer of the album didn't take it that way. I mean, Alto, his conversations with me, we weren't pleased with the whole project. It worked out okay, but the title of the album was, you know, Reed Dickinson. Looking at it on the music shelf, nobody had any idea that that was Alto Reed. So there were some problems with it.
Wow.
But it was the first album that I got name credit on the album. So he just kept dragging me around. And then when Bob went back on tour, this is back 2006.
Okay.
He says, you're coming to the shows, right? I says, I got to get a ticket. He says, I got the ticket for you. You coming? So as many shows as I went to for Bob with Alto, I never sat any further than the first 5-6 rows back from the front.
Wow.
And always had after show passes, you know, to go hang with everybody. It's funny, 2011, when Bob went back on tour, a lot of the guys were coming into town for rehearsals. So I was working at a rental car agency at the airport. So when the guys flew in, they'd be renting cars. And I was working the exit booth. Guy come up to the window with, you know, driving a car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm processing his rental. It happened to be Dave Brewer, the drummer. I looked at him. I says, can I ask you a question? He says, yeah. He says, what do you do for a living? He says, I'm a drummer. I says, okay, I thought so. He says, you know, Bob's rehearsal started earlier today. You're late. He says, how the heck do you know that?
Oh man.
A lot of the guys needed rental cars when they were here for rehearsals. So everybody sure. in the band, you know, you got to go see Marty. You know, so I was doing, hooking them all up with their rentals while every time they were in town.
Wow. Well, I want to flip the page back just for a second okay. here. We're going to go back to the Token Lounge. I do want to talk a little bit more about Alto and your relationship with him. But we were talking about the Token Lounge. How did you happen to have the opportunity to work at the Token, you know, with John Anton and the gang down there? How long have you been serving as a house photographer?
That's been going on since about 2021, somewhere there, before COVID started.
Okay.
I knew Kim Nakashian.
Yeah.
Her and I worked together on, I used to do photos for Dick Wagner also.
Okay.
And then when he passed away, we did three benefits for his charity, Remember the Child. And I was brought in to do photos for those. And Kim worked with that also. So we knew each other from that.
Sure.
So she was helping John Anton book some shows at the Token and talk John into, you know, hey, I know this photographer. We ought to let him photograph the shows. Great publicity. Get
sure
pictures out there. So that's how I got in there.
Very
so
cool.
So I get to pick whatever shows I want to do. I don't care for yeah. a lot of the tribute bands, but the name personalities that come in, I'll go.
And what a lot of people don't understand about the Token Lounge is in the Metro Detroit area, it is, in my opinion, and for my money, the creme de la creme. I mean, you guys bring some big names in there.
They have a long history of booking shows. And John yeah. does a great job at bringing them in.
Yes, he does. Yeah, I catch myself when I'm down there walking around looking at the wall and catching all the different musicians that are up there. But
photography has always been a big thing with the Token. As you yeah. said, by the photos on the wall, I know the guy that did all those photos from
okay.
early days on. And I don't have any of my photos on the wall yet there, but working on something.
Okay.
Got some
well, they should, for goodness sakes. Yeah.
Well, there's but so much on the walls already.
It is amazing. For anybody that has not been to the Token Lounge, you can walk, and this is 300, 350 people easily in this venue.
Yeah, I can't think what the total capacity is.
It's a fairly large room and with an equally large stage, and all the way around on the walls are these photos of, you know, these musicians that have played yeah. there, and it's really cool. But Marty, I want to ask you, speaking of your work, having captured so many photos of legendary rock and blues musicians, have you had any favorites along the way?
There's a lot of them that I really enjoy seeing and being able to photograph. Jimmy McCarty, local guitar player, a mm-hmm. legend in Detroit. I enjoy photographing him every chance I get. I actually have one of his solo albums. The cover photo is one that I did.
Very so nice. Congratulations.
That's kind of cool. I can't remember the name of it. We can look it up later.
Yeah.
So I always love seeing him. Derek St. Holmes is one. I got to meet him through the Dick Wagner charities. He came in for all the shows. He's fun to be around.
Any musicians that were less than friendly to you or even downright rude?
I can't say rude. There's been one or two that had the old thinking of trying to limit the photographers.
Yeah.
Great story. Eric Gales, when he played there, his wife at the time was kind of just managing him. She now plays drums for him.
Okay. But,
she talked to me and a couple other photographers that were there that night and says, only the first three songs.
Wow. Really?
And by the end of the third song, you know, I've been doing this a long time, so I don't get an attitude with anybody. I just, okay, no big deal. You know, she came up to me and she just keep shooting.
Very cool.
So I ended up shooting the whole show. So that's been the way it's worked for me. I'm not shy around personalities like that. I've been doing it my whole life.
Sure.
So I don't get intimidated by them. They're just another person like you and I.
Yep.
So that just changes how you approach them. And that makes a difference, I've found, in how they react to you.
That's true.
I don't think of myself as being anyone special. I've just been lucky my whole photo life, you know, to where everybody enjoys my photos. So they let me do what it is I do.
Yeah. Speaking of your photos, one of my favorite photos that you took, I believe it was last year when Walter Trout was there. There's a shot, a fantastic shot that you have of him playing side by side with Brett Smith Daniels. Now, Brett is the young man that he has playing guitar with him on tour. I've actually had a chance to speak with Brett after Walter's show in Lansing last summer. And his favorite photos of mine were the photos of he and Walter playing together. He yeah. fully understands the importance of the work that he does with Walter, but he has such a deep respect and esteem for him. And he really understands the value of the teacher and the student relationship.
There's a lot to learn from these guys. I enjoy when those that have been in the business a long time, Walter, Papa Chubby, there's a lot of them that I enjoy seeing because they still play their old guitar. Their Fenders and Strats from the 60s.
Yeah.
They're beat up as all get out, but knowing what I know about Fender and even Gibson, the history of those companies, the wood that was used to make those guitars back in the 60s, is a lot different than the wood today. You don't get the same tone quality out of the wood.
Right. Right.
So I enjoy the heck out of it. When I see an old beat up guitar, I'm always asking them, what year is that? And it takes them by surprise because nobody ever pays attention to their guitar. But
yeah, I remember when Walter was in Lansing, he talked about that guitar and, you know, playing with the Blues Breakers and Canned Heat. And I'm like, man, if that guitar could talk, you know, the stories that it could tell. I have to ask you, Marty, has the work that you've done at the Token led to other opportunities at other venues as well?
Can't say that it has.
Okay.
It gets noticed on social media. Most of the musicians will let me know when they're playing somewhere else, mostly the Detroit musicians.
Okay.
So they'll say, hey, you know, I'm playing here, you know, if you want to show up, that'd be great. I mean, I don't shoot just blues or rock and roll. I do a lot of photography for jazz flute player, Alexander Zanjic.
I've been peeping your website and your Facebook, and I've seen that.
He called me a bunch of years ago and says, hey, I've got this new album coming out and there's a photo you took of me that I want to use on the inside of the album. So we did that and he just started saying, you know, come on out and shoot anytime you want. So, you know, he considers me part of his work family. All his band members, you know me, and it's become common knowledge that I'm his photographer. So when he plays, I show up and it's no big deal. They know I'm there. I get whatever I need. So I don't limit myself to one kind of music. I just love the music, all of it. Growing up as a kid, I listened to a lot of rock and rolls. I'm old enough to remember the Beatles on the old Ed Sullivan show.
Yep.
I got interested in jazz when I first heard Pat Metheny, you know, his first albums, and then Al Di Meola. That was, you know, that took me in a strange direction on guitar. My love of music spans a wide variety. As a young teenager, I got interested in guitar because of classical guitar. I saw a TV show with Andre Segovia. That is cool. So I taught myself to read and write for classical guitar. At one time, I could read and write for full orchestra. Taught myself how to do it. Haven't done it in a long time, so it'd be a challenge now. But I can still play guitar, but I know so many great guitarists in this area that there's not much I can add or contribute to the community, but I can take photos of them.
There you go. Now, Marty, I want to return to Alto Reed for a minute.
Okay.
Because you and I have shared some really great stories backstage and before the doors open over there. And I always enjoy your stories because you tell them with a twinkle in your eye. And the one story that I remember, you talked about a friendship that you had developed outside of your work with Alto just a little bit, correct?
Yeah. I knew his daughters, his fiance, Christiana. I still hear from her every once in a while.
Oh, nice.
But like I say, every time he was in town doing any performances, it was automatic. You coming? Yeah.
So, and I'm sure there's plenty of opportunity to meet Bob along the way.
I've never met Bob. Bob is
really,
he's off stage and he's shy. The rest of the band knows me and you know, they're like brothers and sisters, but Bob, he gets off stage. He puts the hoodie up over his head. The security guy ushers him out, makes sure none of us see him.
So even the after concert parties and stuff like that, you never got a chance to talk to him?
Never got a chance. Now, wow. I will tell you, here's a fun story.
Sure.
Years ago, Bob's photographer, Tom Weschler, along with Gary Graff, did a book called Traveling Man. It was kind of a history of Seeger on tour, and it lists everybody that's played with him. When the book was released, Alto came into town to sit in with a Seeger tribute band. So I got a copy of the book at that party. Of course, Gary Graff and Weschler signed it. And somewhere there's a picture with me, Alto, and Doug Podell. You know, Alto signed in my copy of the book.
Very nice.
And that book, when Bob went back on tour, I made up my mind, I need to get everybody I can to sign this.
Sure.
So I was running a card to Jim Moose Brown. I don't know if you know Jim. He's the guy that wrote It's 5 o'clock Somewhere.
Yep.
Big name in Nashville. He's worked with anybody and everybody in Nashville. So I got him to sign my book. And he says, are you trying to get everybody? I says, that's my objective. He says, how about if I take the book with me on tour? He says, what show are you coming to next? I says, I don't know. I know there's a bunch that I'm coming to. He says, how about if I take the book with me on tour and I can get almost everybody to sign it for you? Wow. So I have one of few copies that has been signed by all the current members, as well as some old members.
Very nice.
I know I'm one of two books that Charlie Martin has signed.
That's quite a keepsake.
Yeah. There's still a few that I haven't got to sign it, but.
Did Bob sign it?
I kind of twisted Alto's arm to get Bob to sign it. So my copy is signed by Bob.
How cool is that?
I have a copy of the CD, DVD, disc from Face the Promise that Alto gave me, signed by him and Bob.
Very nice.
The 2011 tour, the band all had hoodies with the big girl and the bullet on the back, and then Silver Bullet Band logo on the front that Alto signed down the middle of the back. And so I have his hoodie from the 2011 tour.
Very cool. Marty, I want to thank you very much for your time, my friend.
I've really
enjoyed our visit today and look forward to working with you again around the Token Lounge stage or maybe somewhere else.
You never know. You'd be surprised where I've been and run into somebody I know.
Indeed. All right. Well, that wraps up this edition of Time Signatures. Once again, my thanks to our guest, Marty Brickard, but also to you, for without you, none of this would be possible. Jim Irvin reminding you that keeping the blues alive is everyone's responsibility, but preserving the history of the blues one story at a time, that's my mission. Until next time, so long, everybody.
This has been Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. For more information on CABS, visit capitalareablues.org. You can find this episode and past episodes at lccconnect.org. The Time Signatures theme song, Michigan Roads, is used by permission and was written by Root Doctor, featuring Freddie Cunningham.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up in
Until next time, keep on keeping the blues alive.
Featuring the faculty, staff, students, and others that helped to make Lansing's premier college what it is today. LCC Connect, Mid-Michigan's connection to Lansing Community College. To find out more about our featured programs or to listen on demand, visit us at lccconnect.org.
LCC Connect.
Voices. Vibes. Vision.
Academic success is a priority at Lansing Community College, and when assistance is needed, tutoring is available to all students. The LCC Tutoring Services at LCC has developed several options to work with students and their busy schedules, including WebEx tutoring sessions, math exam prep parties, and the Writing Center. Resources include quick print stations, chemistry and anatomy models, microscopes, and several other tools to help students. Tutors may also be available for pre-scheduled after-hours appointments. To find out more about tutoring services, visit lcc.edu/tutoring.
Feeling froggy? Well, leap into 20-plus podcasts at lccconnect.org.
LCC Alumni Stories, a show dedicated to highlighting the amazing alumni of Lansing Community College. I'm Steve Robinson, president of LCC, and on each episode, I have the awesome privilege of getting to know one of our many inspiring alums and hearing about their experiences at and since leaving LCC.
Listen to this program and many others on demand at lccconnect.org.
Mom, Dad, I'm in eighth grade now. That means those years of peer pressure are way behind me. From here on out, it's all about good grades and living up to your totally realistic expectations. Alcohol is probably the last thing on my mind. Like you said, I'm too young to drink. When I'm with my friends, all we talk about are current events and boy bands. We're definitely not curious about what alcohol tastes like or why the older kids drink. And do I notice when you have a drink at dinner? Of course not. Just like I haven't noticed where you keep the alcohol. Oh, and if the opportunity arises to talk to me about drinking, you should definitely continue to avoid it. And if you do bring it up, just remind me that I'm too young. That'll probably do the trick.
Real kids are curious about alcohol. 40% try it by the eighth grade. Start a real conversation at underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. Talk early, talk often, get others involved. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
The Lansing Community College Job Training Center provides opportunities for individuals to earn several work certifications in 3 months or less.
Career training options are available both online and in person, covering a range of careers,
including healthcare, automation, IT, accounting, and more.
A complete list of LCC Job Training Center programs can be found at lcc.edu/JTC.
This is WLNZ Lansing. You're listening to LCC Connect, a weekly program that features the voices, vibes, and vision of Lansing Community College. To find out more about LCC Connect programs or to listen on demand, visit us at lccconnect.org.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.